From Duval, Washington, it's the 407 Cast. Here's your host, RSD Superintendent, Dr. Susan Leach.
Hello, and welcome to the 407 Cast, your window into the dynamic world of education in the Riverview School District, where we discuss our achievements, the challenges we face, and the innovative ways we are accelerating learning, and we're excited you chose to listen in. Hello, welcome to the 407 Cast. I am very excited about this week's guest and this week's topic. Our guest this week is the Director of Information Technology for the district, Mr. Chris Collins. Chris, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
You are so welcome. I'm excited about this topic because I love all things technology, and I think for people who have spent a significant amount of time in the district, they may not appreciate how tech-forward the district is. Coming from other places, I was amazed when I came to Riverview and saw everything that was available to me from a technological standpoint. I just wanted to highlight some of that today. Also, I think it's very timely. There are so many amazing things happening at a very rapid pace in the field of technology right now, particularly artificial intelligence. So I wonder if you, A, could talk a little bit about how you came to be in this position and what your background is, and then maybe we could move into AI a little bit.
For sure. Happy to. I'll sure try and share some of the experiences so far to date in Riverview. A little bit about me. I've been living in the Valley here for knocking 30 years. I had a daughter go through class of 2020, Stillwater to Tolt, Cedar Crest. She has now graduated from university and moving on with her life. For those that are not technical, when I started here, I started as a network administrator. We had fractional T1 connections between our buildings, which were basically dial-up, third of a megabit connection. And that was 2006. It's been amazing to be a part of the journey of change. I will say, I think when I started here, it was a selfish reason with my daughter. I came to love the community. I came to love the idea of possibly helping others. And we went from fractional T1s to 12 strands of owned fiber for the district, connecting every one of our schools. And yes, we've come a long way with technology. And I will also say it has not been without bruises.
Mm-hmm. Explain a little bit more for our listeners about owned fiber. What do you mean by that?
Thank you. Yeah, it's a great question. I don't think people fully appreciate it. Many districts have to lease their fiber optics. So the fiber optics just connect the district both to the internet, but also between all of their buildings. Fiber can be very expensive to lease. I think it was 2008, we had an opportunity. For those that don't know, AT&T built a fiber optic ring of 144 strands of fiber around our community, running up through Woodinville, over to Seattle, down through Issaquah, and then all the way up 203 from Carnation. My understanding is there was a pending lawsuit against AT&T, and that fiber optic network that was built was then turned over to all community services, including fire, library, police, and of course, our school systems. We were very, very fortunate with the timing of this because we only had to build fiber to extend off of that main fiber ring up to Cherry Valley, up to Cedar Crest, into Stillwater, and then from Tolt to Carnation Elementary. As a result, we actually own our fiber, so we have zero fiber optic lease costs on a monthly basis, which is a radical saving, unlike many districts.
So let's talk about AI, one of my favorite topics.
Mine too.
You know, we've had this conversation many times. When AI first started becoming big, many districts were saying they banned it. You're not allowed to use it. Teachers can't use it. Students can't use it. They equated it to cheating. And we talked about it and said, if this is what's coming, we should probably embrace it and prepare our teachers and our students to use it responsibly. And so we kind of jumped right in with you leading the charge on that. I wonder if you could just talk a little bit about how that has progressed from that beginning conversation when we said, let's do it, to where we are today.
I would say it's probably one of the most progressive moves that we've made in Riverview with technology at the fastest rate, if that makes sense. So it's the biggest jump we've made with the use of technology in the shortest amount of time. When you think about projectors in classrooms to wireless displays and that nudge and that change, I acknowledge it's hard for everyone. It's hard for me too, but I love it. So when this came along, I think this is the spotlight of where technology can really play a role in education. We talk about personalizing student learning all the time. It's not easy. And how do you expect a teacher to personalize learning for 20 to 30 students in a classroom, right? I mentioned to you before, and I think one of the standout components with AI is as all of our work changes every single day, we're all doing more. We're in a constant budget crisis these days in education. Mm-hmm. We have to accept the additional roles that each of us has to take on. But what AI brings that we're not yet focusing on is what can I offload? What are the automated pieces of my work that I can offload to something else? I think the other important thing with AI in education is it truly plays a role. AI can be as beneficial to Tim here as the director of communications as it can be for the superintendent, as it can be for a registrar, as it can be for a teacher. If you think about it that way, I don't feel like there's ever been a similar technology that can potentially touch every part of an organization. I know that's a lot. Where it gets exciting for Riverview, I think, and we've talked about this before, we're not so big that we're wrapped up in politics, but we're not so small that we can't be creative. I think when you take something like that and you couple that with an amazing community, and then you pair that further with the members of our community, their level of involvement, engagement in the school district, but then you start factoring in proximity to Amazon, Microsoft, there's a Google campus. All of these tech businesses are here. We have an increasing number of those families that are very attracted to the small community of the Lower Snoqualmie Valley between Carnation and Duval. We hope, obviously, that we see those changes in enrollment. We have an opportunity in front of us here to meet the changing needs, not just the community or education as a whole, but we have an opportunity to be innovative in front of us here and how we do it. I think that's highlighted by a couple of things we've already done. You asked, when was it? It was over a year ago, the fall of 2023. When we first had that conversation, and it was a result of actually your superintendent student advisory committee, and we were looking for something more to bring the conversation in with the kids. And if you remember, it was just kind of off the charts, and we just had a very high level of engagement from the students. With that, that has just spiraled, and I know you asked, so I'll try and touch on that as well, whether districts were jumping in or shying away. And I say this because many districts, and rightfully so, to each their own, but they were jumping straight to a board policy. They were jumping straight to banning ChatGPT and any of these emerging tools, because the threat was constantly around cheating. And it's going to be until we change our thinking. And it's only cheating if you don't ask a different question or if you don't ask the question differently. We have to get to a mindset where we're flipping the use of technology to change how we learn, I think, in my opinion. I'm not a certificated teacher. I don't claim to be. I never will be. But there are some obvious things that technology can do to help fuel and support individual student learning.
What precautions are we taking as a district to help mitigate dangers?
Great question. There's a lot of unknown still, to be honest. And that's just the nature of the rate of change. And as I said before, and you and I have talked about it, the rate of change versus the rate of adoption. It's never more separated than in education, in my experience, in my opinion. And the fear is exponentially now that gap is going to grow if we don't start to embrace some of the opportunities in front of us. And yes, inherently with that come dangers. Unlike other districts that were jumping to policy, we shift it to bring student voice into it. We incorporated learning opportunities for our teachers in our August digital days. We have those learning loops available for people to explore. We started as a result of the student advisory, and we ended up building out a student advisory AI group that was extended between the middle and high school. And I don't know about anyone else, but I've never surveyed 1,500 students and got 200 yeses. I'd like to be a part of a broader conversation. So it was an incredible turnout. We scaled it down. An incredible diverse group of students that had opinions ranging from too little, too late to this is the worst thing ever. And we ended up forming that advisory committee. They met several times throughout the school year. And what we did is we needed to shift the fear of AI into how do we understand what role it plays. To say we can understand AI is ridiculous, but how can we use it? What we came up with was a belief statement. And so our students, which is still in draft mode, it was the work of our student advisory through our meetings to actually come up with the key pillars of a belief statement and to then use AI to go back and forth on that belief statement to come up with this draft. Next steps with that is to get it in front of a broader group of people, get their input. And so instead of going straight to board policy, we opted to adopt what we are calling a belief statement and implemented it as part of the strategic plan, get that out in front of people, and then get it up on our websites. And that becomes our guiding pathway for next steps to policy or procedure around anything with AI. I can't leave this topic without identifying those pillars. So our students were actually incredible. They wanted to focus on literacy. So not just the terms of AI, but how do you actually work with it? What does it mean to use AI? Working with the students, we focused on three key areas of AI, and it was literacy, the ethical use, which is a really big one, and the kids did some really great work around this. And then the last one was opportunities to integrate it into the classroom for both teacher and student. That group has done such an incredible job. They have gone forward and presented the school board. We've hired student employees. We had one of our students as employees over summer. We had those students, Lydia Swenson and Rylan Orman, were the two leaders at Cedar Crest that did this work. I think what was so powerful about these students being employees for the first time was they got to see truly everything that happens and what makes a school district work. And while Rylan ended up veering off and starting to learn about networks and getting devices prepared for students and all sorts of different applications, Lydia was able to join us and do some work with AI and developing an AI website. I can't recognize those two enough. They've just been incredible in this work, and it's been so amazing to have students actually involved. I don't want to leave this podcast without sharing that we have been able to build incredible relationships, specifically at Microsoft, through connections in our community. These connections have actually led to some pretty interesting relationships. You actually had the opportunity to introduce me to one of our very own parents, who is the director of AI and global applications for Microsoft. In working with him, I was actually able to visit the Microsoft campus. We talked for hours and had some great fun. I'm sharing this because we now have an arrangement where we are bringing some of our students out to Microsoft to get an inside look into the development of AI and what's coming in the future. And they have expressed interest in having our students do a similar podcast or videocast with Microsoft distributed through their channel. It is such an exciting time.
I get excited when you preview some of the tools that we have that are coming on board. Could you give some examples to our listeners of the types of things that AI would be able to do for a student, a teacher? I know you use it in the IT department, for example, to write code for a task that would have taken you significantly longer to complete. AI can complete that for you.
Yeah.
What are the kinds of things that teachers would be able to do with AI?
There's too many to list. Like, literally... Let me backtrack a little bit here. So for those that don't know, we just entered an agreement with the enterprise version of Magic School, magicschool.ai. We introduced this 2 summers ago, and we had some teachers that jumped right in. I would say it's probably the highest response we've got on a particular tool. And that is because it is built by teachers, designed for the classroom. It's a small organization out of Boulder, Colorado. And just this past week, we've released the full enterprise version to all staff and students in Riverview. The best way to see it is to open up your browser, go into your launch pad, you'll see a folder called AI Tools, and you click Magic School, and you will have immediately in front of you up to 80 different tools. There's more being added every day. Everything from lesson plans to rubric generators to report card comments to rap battles between two historians. You can create classrooms respecting the privacy of the students, and then using the tools, you don't want to put 80 tools in front of a student necessarily. So you can create a lesson plan, create a room for your classroom, and select the 2, 3 tools that you want to do that are focused on a particular topic that you're working on, whether it's science or math, and assign those tools to the classroom. You can drop a launch code into Teams, or the students can just go through ClassLink themselves, and they have a controlled space to explore. But the difference with AI is AI knows what they're supposed to be working on, so they can steer them back on task. The most powerful part for a teacher, I think, is you actually have a collected log of everything that's happened in that classroom. You can pause students, you can work with them, you can redirect. We would need hours and a video to kind of show some of the tools. There'll be hundreds here, and that's just through one application. It's very powerful.
I was lucky enough 2 years ago, Heather Taujik, the superintendent in the Issaquah School District, gifted me a registration to the ASU GSV Summit. So Arizona State University Global Silicon Valley Summit in San Diego. It was one of the most incredible conferences that I have been to as a professional. I was able to hear Sal Khan at the time. Khan Amigo was just coming out, and he actually demoed that for us.
Yeah.
And it was just incredible to see the potential to enhance a student's learning with that tool. Really excited to think that we now, own that product. Yep. And I wonder if you could just talk a minute about that.
We're still working through the specifics. What we've done is we've pre-registered or authenticated our domain extension with Conmigo. So it is free to all teachers. Mm-hmm. The Conmigo is the next step we're taking with that. Really what that is a personalized tutor for every student. That tutor can grow with each student, can provide data and analytics back, can maybe help use AI to personalize some more learning for the student. What that's going to provide in addition, and it's not just Khan Academy and Conmigo, Raina is the AI agent within Magic School. Mm-hmm. So these tools are readily available to people, and if they want to learn more, you know, reach out. It was discussed with our superintendent's cabinet last week. What's the opportunity with HR and teaching and learning? Can we offer optional trainings for teachers who don't have time during the day or can't get away but are curious? Like, let's all get together and explore this together. And last thing I'll say about Conmigo, but just with the launch of Magic School, we have 220 teachers around there. You know, we fluctuate. We had 162 active teachers prior to flipping this switch. And I think that is one of the most powerful numbers that represent how it's already being used. And so how do we now collectively start sharing that? Some of the things that are going to come with it, both Conmigo, is being able to create templates that could be used across grade bands or content areas. That is just a launch point. Every teacher doesn't have to start from scratch with a lesson plan or any of these tools. Mm-hmm. Teachers can build things out. Think of it like an old macro. And then that gets pushed out, and then teachers can manipulate it to further customize it. Mm-hmm. That's what I was just touching on earlier about we're all doing more. It's mm-hmm. going to get worse. Embrace the tools to help you with the things that you don't need to be doing and be more part of that learning.
What is the importance of human interaction in AI? And could you talk about HAIH?
Yeah. Our students really embrace this, so I want to start with that, and that's what was really cool about it. There was this initial fear, I think, around AI where write me a 500-word essay on Shakespeare. That was the big fear that cheating. This is cheating. This is the new education system. What HAIH proposes is a shift in the learning or how that learning and when that learning is happening. And that's how I frame it, because the only value that's going to come out of AI is with human input first and human inquiry. You can let that AI wrestle around with it, but you as a human still have to interpret it on the backside. So in short, it has to start with human inquiry and it has to end with human understanding. In a way, I think it forces us to shift how we're learning things. And the rate at which that can happen is just exponential in comparison, right? Having a human front to this and a human end is critical. I think the learning begins, at least what I've heard and seen with the students, is the learning starts to happen within that exchange. The thing about AI is it's adaptive, unlike other technologies. As you put more in, the more fine-tuned it comes out. And so we're faced with, quite frankly, an obligation at this point to teach students how to do that interaction. And that's why focusing on HIH is just so important, courtesy of the state superintendent and the guidance they put out. And so we embraced that early on, yeah.
I feel like we could do two more episodes just on AI, but I want to switch gears and talk about cybersecurity, because I think that has also been a very important topic, particularly as it relates to students. If you could explain why students have become such a target for cyber attacks and why that makes schools and school systems so much more likely to be the target of one of those attacks. And then part two of that question is, what are some things that we do at the district to help mitigate the likelihood that we would have one of those attacks?
It's a terrifying topic. And I think, as with any technology, I personally, in my experience, feel that it always starts with positive intent. It's what gets lost along the way and then how it's used by others. Part of that even comes back to how to educate students to use technology properly. It's not just about incorporating it in the classroom. It's just being responsible with it. And I've shared it with the board. I've shared it with you. Government and public education is exponentially higher than anything else, the number one targeted sector for cyber criminals. And you're right. I get that question a lot. Why? And the truth is, these kids don't exist in the world yet, according to the outside world. There's an opportunity for cyber terrorists to steal the identity of all of our students. And I'm going to share two critical things about this. A, their information's not out there yet. And do we really want our 17 and 18-year-olds stepping out into the world to find out that they've got debt and credit cards and all this stuff. It's all over the news. One of the largest student information systems had a data breach in early September, and I think it was upwards of 65 million. So PII, if you hadn't heard of it, just stands for personally identifiable information. And anything like that, when you think about the amount of data housed in these student information systems, regardless of the system, the data's there. And why it's so attractive is not only because of the value of the information that can be obtained, but secondly, there's no funding for technology in education. And so they're also the most vulnerable systems. They don't have the greatest, highest levels of security, right? And so when you put those two pieces together, it's potentially a gold mine. For those that know me or hear me preach, privacy, 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 and integration. Those are the founding pieces to what we do with technology in Riverview. The protection of our student privacy is hands down. I mean, I'd lay down in front of a bus to stop this. Privacy is what matters to students today from a technology standpoint.
We've had many conversations about that.
One of the ways that we try to offset the risk of privacy or cybersecurity or data breaches is, what technology are we using? We have been blessed by this community with incredible support for our technology levies. As I said, there's very little state funding around this. We have to use a percentage of money and figure out how to get the proper tools into the classroom, how to make the networks work, how to pay our staff, who are also funded through us. It starts with the tools that we use. And what I mean by that is, we're not running a bunch of computers running Windows XP. When products become end of life, they become vulnerable. And that's what creates exploits. Software just as contains exploits. Exploits allow bad people in and good information out in a bad way. We have to start, obviously, with our infrastructure. We're responsible for safe filtering of the internet. We're federally required to provide secure internet. I'm saying all this because it starts with the hardware and the systems that we run that nobody sees. And so that's going to be your first line of defense. The second line of defense is educating students. And then anytime that we enter into any sort of software usage agreement, or you might hear it referred to as software as a service, is commonly referred, we go through a very set protocol of privacy and how the data being used and what data do you truly need. So gone are the days of the past where it's just like, oh, you need all our student data? Someone would just email a file over with every piece of information out. Sadly, a lot of systems still fall back what's called SFTP, or a very fundamental way of transferring data. The S in front of it just now means secure, meaning it's got some password connected to it. But where we want to get to and how we integrate with our systems is very important. And it starts with how we connect our student information system and what software we choose to make sure that data is being read, not stored, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And if it's being stored, what is the actual information that you need? And then there's a whole process of a data privacy agreement. There is a procedure for, has the company taken a privacy pledge? So you can just jump online and do a search for privacy pledge. It's really neat. It's a consortium of vendors, believers, educators, everyone else that believes that privacy is important. I guess to sum it up, privacy is everything. It's the hardware, it's the software, it's the person, it's how you use technology and what systems you use and then how they talk. It's a really organic system.
Sometimes I hear teachers saying, even though we're filtering, that they see students getting on websites that they know they shouldn't be able to get on. How is that happening? Are they getting through our filter?
They sure can. This is a great opportunity to loop back to computer use agreements and actually reflecting back on policy and procedure. There are a number of things, and believe me, our students are incredible.
They're savvy.
And they're savvy, and they're incredibly creative in what they do. It's the same old thing. I never want to focus the conversation on the 1%. We have 99% of students that these laptops are meticulously used. They are meticulously maintained. But in the instances where there are reports, the most important thing to do is help us help you. Just saying, I saw a kid on TikTok, let us know. You can create a help desk ticket. There's a tech on site. If we know, we can look. But here's what they're doing. The students have figured out a way to install what's, in essence, just what's called a VPN, a virtual private network. And this is done through browser extensions. So you can install extensions to web browsers. And what that does is, in essence, bypass our filter. And it randomizes the network address using our wireless and then finding its way around, which then peels back the whole internet and all the wonder in it, of good and bad. But that's typically how it happens. But it is a violation. You know, one might ask, well, why don't you just block extensions from being installed on browsers? Well, we have many tools that require browser extensions installed. So we have shifted to pushing those out to devices and making changes that way. And I'll say it again, it comes back to then having conversations with the students about why. And I don't know that we're having those conversations in a timely and sufficient way. It's an opportunity.
Every week when we record, I feel like we get started and then the next thing I know, it's time to wrap up. And this conversation has been no exception to that. I feel like we could continue going for another 2 hours because there are so many different rabbit holes that we can go down with technology that are so interesting. Is there any last thing that you want people to know about technology in Riverview or about AI?
One of the most important things is recognition of the entire department and the team. We have a very tight-knit group, and they're incredibly responsive, they're very caring, and they love their work. I think we need 12 people in the department, and I know that's not real.
Noted.
And so, just like everyone else, right? And everyone's taking on more and more work. But what I want from all of them is what their interests are for themselves, and that customer service is more important than swapping a hard drive or something. To close this out without recognizing just the exceptional work that every single one of them do. They're a wonderful group of people, and they care. And then AI, it's already changed tenfold since we started this conversation. So I think it'll be interesting to continue to bring it into conversations, to share, to explore tools, and really then start reaching out and highlighting some of the people that are doing amazing things with it. We're just trying to make it a part of the educational experience.
Thank you. And thank you for listening. Join us next week when we continue our conversations about all things education.